This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. New Hampshire made it two in a row for John Kerry last night, but now the race for the Democratic nomination for president changes. After months of retail politics in Iowa and New Hampshire, the campaign shifts into a different gear. There are seven primaries next Tuesday, well, actually five primaries and two caucuses. So instead of pancake breakfasts and town hall meetings, the campaigns will race between airports in seven states. This new phase will test the stamina of the candidates and their organizations, and much will depend on how much money they have to advertise on television. Later this hour, we'll talk with a member of the 9/11 Commission about why they want more time to complete their investigation. We'll also go to London, where Prime Minister Tony Blair has been cleared in a long-awaited report into the suicide of a weapons inspector. The Director General of the BBC has resigned. But first, what's next for the Democratic presidential candidates? If you have a question about the primary races to come, call us here in Washington at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. As they head from the cold of New Hampshire for the southern and border states where the next round of primaries takes place next Tuesday. Joining us now is Terry Neal, chief political correspondent for the WashingtonPost.com. He managed to get a flight out of New Hampshire last night. He joins us from his offices in Arlington, Virginia. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us and still in New Hampshire, where I understand it's now snowing, is NPR's political editor, Ken Rudin. Hi, Ken.
Yes, I'm freezing my caucuses off here.
Timing is everything, isn't it, Ken? How much momentum does last night's win give Kerry as he heads into the next round? Terry Neal?
Well, I think it gives him a lot of momentum. It remains to be seen, however, What's different about this calendar is that it's so front loaded. So it'll be interesting to see if momentum is something that takes a little bit of time to build. And in this particular case, he's got a week to build it and to take that momentum and use it in seven states that are spread out all over the country that are extremely diverse and that sort of thing. So he has momentum, but the landscape shifts to states that may not necessarily be hospitable to Kerry. You've got some southern states, in particular South Carolina, Oklahoma, places like that, where his message might be a little bit of a tougher sale. So,
and Ken Rudin, of course, everybody has to change tactics.
Well, exactly right. But, it's interesting, in the seven states that are voting next Tuesday, John Kerry has never shown any evidence of any strength in any of them, but as Terry was talking about, momentum has a strange way of working. Remember 10 days ago or 15 days ago, John Kerry was in double digits behind Howard Dean in New Hampshire, and once Iowa happened, then the whole ball game changed. So even if John Kerry has no evidence of organization or support or momentum or building blocks or endorsements in these seven states, it's very, very interesting what wins in Iowa and New Hampshire can do.
Yes, but in terms of organizational strain, and let's ask Terry Neal about this, John Kerry fired his campaign manager, took out a new mortgage on his house in Boston, threw the $6 million into his campaign, and moved his whole organization to Iowa, bet everything on the farm there, and that proved out to be a good bet, and then moved all of that to New Hampshire.
Exactly. And I think people are so used to political reporters and analysts thinking that they have all of the answers that I may shock some people here and say, I really don't know what's going to happen. In a lot of these states, people haven't been paying that close attention to the race. So I think there's a question of, will people say, see John Kerry on the cover of Time magazine, that's the guy they know, will they vote for him? Or are they still completely open to a message from some of these other candidates who haven't done as well, particularly Howard Dean, Wesley Clark, and John Edwards? I think it remains to be seen. It's because of the way the calendar has changed, there's no real precedent that we can look at for the way things will work out this year.
Ken Rudin, also in the relatively short time that voters now have to evaluate these candidates, what are they going to be learning about them, and how are they going to be learning it?
Well, certainly if they watch TV tomorrow night, they're going to see a very crucial debate that NPR will be running on many of their stations in South Carolina. Now, South Carolina is a key state because from the beginning, John Edwards, many people thought that he might be the most attractive challenger to President Bush, and from the beginning, he was never supposed to do well in Iowa and New Hampshire. The bump he got out of Iowa the strong second-place finish was a shock to many. The fact that he didn't replicate it in New Hampshire was a shock to many as well. But South Carolina was always the place where John Edwards was supposed to make his stand. Same with Wesley Clark. Wesley Clark was always hoping to do better in the South, where he's from, where veterans are more of a predominantly part of the population than they are in Iowa and New Hampshire. African-Americans, we haven't seen any African-American vote until now. South Carolina has perhaps 45% expected in Tuesday's primary. Al Sharpton, who's been invisible until now, may do well there as well. So a lot of the demographics certainly change now that we've left the lily white states of Iowa and New Hampshire.
Let's talk about tactics for just a minute, and we'll talk about the front runner first. There's no way that John Kerry can escape that label anymore. What is his goal here? Is he trying to sustain momentum, or does he try to mount what would be a knockout blow against the definite number two at the moment, and that would be Howard Dean? Terry Neal?
Well, he'll go for the knockout blow, and it would be nice for him to win a couple of these states. If he could win a couple of the big ones, particularly Missouri and Arizona, he could make a real claim that this thing is essentially over. On the other hand, having won the first two states, you know, I think he's just got to do pretty well in some of these states, and you've got some crucial contests coming up just a few days later in Michigan and Washington State. And Kerry, my understanding is a big favorite in Michigan. But one of the things in terms of his tactics that takes a lot of pressure off of him, and this is the greatest, this is the good thing about being a front runner, and this is what momentum does for you, is while all of these campaigns are struggling to some extent with money. We don't know exactly, because they don't have to tell us exactly what their money situation is right now. But Kerry will get a huge bump in what they call earned media or free media. People will be covering him. And so you say, how will people learn about these candidates? Well, a lot of people are going to learn about him not from advertisements, not from people sending direct mail, but they're going to hear about it, as I said, on the cover of Time magazine, on all the news reports, and that gives him a huge advantage in a lot of ways.
Howard Dean lost in double digits to Senator Kerry last night. He told Bob Edwards this morning on Morning Edition that he plans to stay in the race for the foreseeable future, whether he wins any of the races or not. And as you look ahead, Ken Rudin, where does John Kerry look good?
John Kerry or Howard Dean?
Howard Dean, excuse me.
Well, I've been thinking the exact same thing. I mean, Howard, you know, I remember Mo Udall in 1976. He always ran a close second to Jimmy Carter in all the primaries. And finally, at some point, people said, well, you know, he's going to have to start winning somewhere. And when he didn't, his bid for the Democratic nomination ended. I'm thinking the same thing about Howard Dean. People in Iowa and New Hampshire knew him better, far better, than any of the subsequent states will, and they didn't, apparently they either didn't like what they saw or they didn't like him enough to give him the first place finish. If you look at the terrain next Tuesday, I mean, South Carolina, Oklahoma, you know, Missouri, this is not Howard Dean country. Apparently Dean is going to make a big push in the New Mexico caucuses, and I don't know if a win in New Mexico is going to sustain him, but if you look at what's coming up, I think Howard Dean's best chance to win may be behind him, certainly in the next week or two.
Let's get a caller on the air. Our number, if you'd like to join us, by the way, is 800-989-8255. And David's with us from St. Paul.
Hello, Neil.
Hi.
I think that one of the things that's happening is a lot of analysts, for some reason, are not looking, taking a larger view. And I think they're shortchanging Mr. Kerry in the South. The dynamic within the military is such that if you are a decorated Vietnam War veteran, you are almost an honorary Southerner, regardless of your ethnicity and regardless of where you are from in the country. And I think that, I mean, even in New Hampshire, I mean, the way that Kerry's been tracking among veterans, he's certainly exceeding the vote that's going to Wesley Clark. And there's a big reason for that. Wesley Clark was a four-star general. Most veterans don't get anywhere near that, and the fact is, most veterans are former enlisted members, or junior officers who left after their second or third term of duty.
And we've had John Kerry campaigning with the men who served with him on the boat that he served on in the
right.
Mekong Delta during the Vietnam War, and that's been a very powerful image.
He also has Max Cleland running around with him, who is from Georgia, who was the victim, of course, of that very scurrilous campaign that was run against him by Shaxby Chambliss, He's been on the stump both in Iowa and in New Hampshire with him, and I assume he's going to be on the rest of the tour with him as well.
It may have been scurrilous, but it was also successful.
It was successful.
Chambliss is now in the Senate.
It was scurrilous.
Well, let's get a response from Terry Neal. Is the veterans' vote in that special appeal going to be convincing, do you think, in South Carolina?
I think your caller makes some good points. I partly agree with him. I think it's worth noting that of these seven states on next Tuesday, only one of them is really a southern state. I mean, Oklahoma is kind of a southern midwestern state. I think that is, despite what region you're talking about, that is Kerry's biggest appeal right now. And it's interesting that your caller brought up Max Cleland, because in a lot of ways, that's been one of the most important endorsements anyone has received. I attended several events with Kerry, and he had Max Cleland with him, and I've never seen Democrats go, these audience go so crazy about anyone as they have about Max Cleland, who I think is going to become, if he's not already, sort of a cause célèbre among Democrats this year, who are extremely angry at the way the Bush administration, which handpicked Saxby Chambliss, ran against him last year. But no, if you look at Arizona, for instance, Kerry's running first in the polls there. They have 500,000 some veterans there. It's not a southern state, but
right.
that will resonate there, and Oklahoma as well too. So.
Neal, what I learned in Iowa, what benefited John Kerry the most was not only the fact that he stayed out of the Dean Gephardt nasty campaign and benefited from that, but also the tens of thousands of phone calls made by veterans to veterans in Iowa, and certainly in South Carolina. Terry talks about Arizona, but South Carolina has 400,000 veterans. Apparently, the Kerry campaign is going to busload a bunch of them down there this week to make their case as well.
Very quickly, let me ask you about the new second tier of candidates, and that would, I assume, include General Clark. That would include Senator Edwards. They came in a very close. Who wants to be called third or fourth? I guess that's still debatable, though Clark, I think, got a few more votes. And then Joe Lieberman. Terry Neal?
Well, let's start from the bottom. Let's talk about Joe Lieberman. I watched his concession speech last night, and I thought it was one of the strangest. I mean, Howard Dean got a lot of criticism for the yowl or whatever you want to call that. Lieberman's speech was truly bizarre for completely different reasons. He acted as though he had won something. We really finished a fairly decisive fifth. He said that this was a race for third place. I mean, I think that he is going to have to do something really big here on February 3rd, or else I think his campaign is essentially over.
Ken Rudin, did Clark and Edwards do enough to just stay alive?
Well, they certainly stay alive. No, New Hampshire was never going to be Clark or Edwards' territory. But again, just as Gephardt had to win Iowa and did not, John Edwards has to win South Carolina, because if he doesn't win there, then the question is, where does he win?
Let's get another caller on the line and go to Marianne, and she's with us from St. Louis, Missouri, where an important primary will be held, very important, that had been conceded to Richard Gephardt as a favorite son. Of course, he's withdrawn.
Hi. I was just calling to say that because we're having a primary next week, I'm kind of concerned that the Democratic Democratic candidates haven't really paid too much attention to us yet. Maybe that was because Dick Gephardt was in the race, but now that he's out of it, actually, I don't really believe he was much of a factor here, because the people here in St. Louis don't really care for him that much. But anyway, what I was going to say is that I don't see any signage on the streets. We haven't had our bombardment of commercials yet or anything. So you guys need to get out here and pay attention to us, because we've got a lot of delegates at stake.
In 30 seconds, Ken Rudin, I mean, she's right. Missouri is the biggest prize next Tuesday.
It's the biggest prize, and she's also right. We were ignoring it because of Gephardt. Now that Gephardt is gone, look, where's the first place that John Kerry is going after New Hampshire? It's Missouri. He's hoping to do well there. The ads will go up starting today, and obviously there's a lot of talk about a lot of Gephardt people coming to the Kerry side.
And a very quick question, Ken Rudin. Why does Governor Dean, this is an email from Trent Richardson, have more convention delegates than Senator Kerry when the senators won two states? This according to the Times and the Post.
Because there's also super delegates involved, people, members of the Congress who have endorsed that they have delegate strength, whether they're part of a primary or not. They endorsed early. They've already given Dean those delegates. But, of course, more and more will come on board once a winner is decided, and that could be John Kerry.
Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, and Terry Neal of the WashingtonPost.com. Thanks to you both. When we come back, the 9/11 Commission. This is NPR News.